This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 128 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. You know how I know that people are getting excited about the fantasy football season? Because my inbox was filled with keeper questions this week, like a ton of them. You guys are getting thirsty, and I absolutely love it. As a result of that, I may not be able to get to all of those questions, but I will be doing a How to Select Your Keeper podcast this offseason. I'm assuming most of you guys don't have to submit your keeper selections just yet, so be on the lookout over the next couple of weeks for that episode. It'll help you understand the right process for keeper selection, as opposed to just me saying, just keep this guy. I'm not trying to manage your fantasy football teams, you guys. There were lots of other great questions, though, for this week's mailbag, so let's get to them. This first question is from Twitter, from @JustinRao23. It says, I'm sure this will be a popular question. Where is Kamara ranked in your projections compared to Ingram now that Ingram is suspended? Also, where do you think Ingram should be going in drafts? So I wrote an article this week on Kamara's projection and sort of the process and getting to that projection over on NumberFire.com. If you want the TLDR, basically Kamara is going to regress, and the Saints probably won't be as run-friendly as a team in 2018 as they were in 2017. Both the pass-to-rush attempt ratio and the amount of rushing touchdowns that they had will more than likely regress. But Kamara can combat all of that with a high number of rushing attempts, or a higher number of rushing attempts. I actually have him projected for about 65 more attempts this year compared to last year. Post-Ingram suspension, Kamara jumped Saquon Barkley for the RB5 spot in my PPR projections. Ingram fell to an RB3 when looking at season-long numbers, too. But obviously, we're under the assumption there that you'd be taking a zero from Mark Ingram for the first 4 weeks while he was out. You would hopefully have some sort of replacement-level guy for Mark Ingram during those four games, right? So you can probably value Mark Ingram more as a lower-end RB2. I do think, though, that one thing that often goes unnoticed when targeting players who are suspended is that fantasy owners don't always factor in the cost of holding onto dead bench space during the most important waiver wire time of the season. So Ingram's projection isn't just, here's what he'll do across 12 games, and here's how he'll do with a replacement-level player factored in. Or at least in my opinion, that's not how you should be looking at this. You have to look at your individual league settings and see if it's feasible to hold a worthless asset for the first 4 weeks of the season. Because Mark Ingram is worthless for the first 4 weeks of the season. It's a lot easier to do that and hold on to him in leagues where there's large benches. But it can be tough if you only have, say, four bench spots. So that may force me off Mark Ingram this season in a lot of leagues. This next question is from @D3FaultID, default ID with a little elite speak in it. Is points per game an optimal way to examine a player's effectiveness? Why don't we adhere to their bust rate and instead list the percentage at which they finish outside top 12 of position? So I've been citing top 12 and top 24 performances for years because it shows us consistency as opposed to looking at some random average that can be skewed by big performances. But at the same time, you guys, let's not take this to the extreme and think that there's no correlation between points per game scored and the number of top 12 finishes a player has. There's absolutely a correlation. And the other thing is that you have to ask yourself, why top 12 or why top 24? We know it's because we're looking at RB1 or RB2 or wide receiver 1 or wide receiver 2 performances, but it's still a subjective way to view whether or not someone was a bust or not. Judging a bust is still subjective. Where do you draw the line? I don't mind looking at points per game, and I don't mind looking at number of top 12 or 24 performances either. We should look at all of those things when we're trying to see how a player performed. So really, I think the answer to this question is to take a step back and realize that there really is no optimal way to examine a player's effectiveness. It's a lot deeper than just looking at how he performed in terms of fantasy points scored and displaying that performance in different ways. This next one's from Twitter, from @JoeSonOfJoe. Why are many projecting Penny to be a success in year one despite a very suspect O-line, competitive defenses in the conference, and a Schottenheimer in charge? The short answer is volume. Schottenheimer will absolutely want to run the football as he's done that in the past, and Pete Carroll's already talked about getting back to running the football in that offense. Again, I don't agree with that. You have Russell Wilson, so what are you doing running the football? But the other thing too is that you don't spend a first round pick on a running back to watch him not be involved in the offense. I do think it's going to be easier said than done for the Seahawks to run the ball though, because rushing volume can often be dictated by game script. And the Seahawks defense isn't close to what it used to be during the Marshawn Lynch era. I also do think the offensive line piece is a tad overblown. They added Dwayne Brown last year, and he should continue to make an impact. I actually talked to my colleague at NumberFire, Jim Sonnes, about this because Jim's one of the best offensive line gurus out there. He pulled up some interesting on-off stats with Brown and the Texans and the Seahawks over the last 2 years, the two teams that Brown played on. When Brown was in the lineup, those teams allowed a 6.96% sack rate. Without him, that jumped to 7.17%. And with Brown, the teams averaged 3.92 yards per carry and a 36.3% success rate. Without him, that number fell to 3.71, so about 0.21 yards lower, and a 34.5% success rate, or 2 percentage points lower. But running in Brown's direction, the Texans and Seahawks have averaged 4.64 yards per carry and a 39.7% success rate. Running in that same direction without Brown yields nearly a yard per carry loss and a 36.8% success rate. And for what it's worth, guys, last season before they got Dwayne Brown, the Seahawks running backs averaged 2.98 yards per carry, and that was with Chris Carson. That jumped to 3.38 yards per carry during the games that Brown played. Now, that's still not great by any means, but the unit itself can really only go up, and it got better when Dwayne Brown entered the picture. That's why Rashad Penny is being projected how he's being projected. This next question says, how do you view quarterbacks with little to no sample size but have been thrust into a good situation like Pat Mahomes? Would you be comfortable drafting someone like this as your only quarterback? Is it worth using another roster spot to draft an additional safe late round quarterback as a backup in case he doesn't hit? Thanks as always, Adam. First and foremost, we've got to remember that any approach to a fantasy football draft isn't necessarily the same across all leagues. Some leagues where there are quarterback hoarders and deep benches, they'll force you to hold multiple quarterbacks. In that case, I may go with the approach of having an upside player like Mahomes and pair him with a guy with a safer floor. But generally speaking, you guys, your late round quarterback target should be all about upside. Ignore any downside he has and see if he can be a realistic top five passer in fantasy football. If he does have that upside, which to me Mahomes does given his weapons and the ambiguity surrounding his talent, then you snag him. Worst case scenario, he doesn't pan out and you can stream the position. And given the depth of the position right now, you can probably still find very viable starters off your waiver wire in that scenario. And again, this is in most leagues. There is nothing more tilting as an analyst than when someone responds to you and says, not in my league. Like, yeah, dude, I get it. You can't stream quarterbacks when your league has 36 bench spots. I understand. But in most leagues, you can stream effectively. This next one says, is Geis this year's running back that the hype train will be all about but rarely see the field, aka the Kenneth Dixon Award? Thanks again for the amazing podcast. You definitely put the most thought and logic into fantasy football. I learned so much about the game we love from you. Thanks, David. Thank you, David. That means a lot. But no, I don't think that's really fair. I don't think this Kenneth Dixon to Darius Geis comparison is fair at all. Dixon was actually a pretty decent prospect, but you have to look at situation and draft equity here. The Ravens spent a day three pick on Kenneth Dixon while Darius Geis was drafted in the second round. Dixon's also suffered from injury and suspension, whereas Geis is entering the league with none of that. Maybe there's off the field issues, but it's not like Kenneth Dixon's situation. I think if you want to knock Darius Geis, you should be knocking the fact that Chris Thompson is there and it might be difficult for Darius Geis to catch a lot of passes. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think there's that big of a hype train or that much of a hype train around Darius Geis right now in the fantasy football industry. And I definitely don't think that there are parallels to Darius Geis and Kenneth Dixon. This next question is from @PDXTroyBoy. Will Alex Smith come back down to earth in 2018? New team and arguably less talent around him and a rookie running back. What's his value look like? Let's look at everything working against Alex Smith this year compared to last season. He has worse weapons across the field. Literally every aspect of this offense is worse, from tight end to probably wide receivers and running backs. Smith also did things last year that he's never done before in his career, especially with the deep ball. Last year, he completed 18.4% of his passes that traveled 15 or more air yards. His highest as a Chief prior to last season was 15.4%. He also had 40.4% of his total passing yards coming from those throws. That's over 14% higher than his previous high. And 50% of his touchdowns came on deep balls. His previous high was 21.7%. He always has kind of been an underrated fantasy asset because of what he can do with his legs. But I don't see any need to reach for Alex Smith in drafts this year because there's little chance that he ends up doing what he did last year in Washington this season. This next one's from @PrivatePookie. What rookie do you think can be this year's Kareem Hunt? And who is your favorite rookie running back this year? Well, my favorite rookie running back this year is Saquon Barkley, and it's not even close. If you want my second favorite, I would side with Rashad Penny. But anytime there's a question of which player could be this year's player X, I come from the perspective that it's completely situation-based and not talent-based. Like, realistically, if I were to pinpoint one prospect in this class who profiled and looked like Kareem Hunt, it was John Kelly. He looks like a Kareem Hunt light. But if we're strictly talking about situation, John Kelly isn't a good answer here because Todd Gurley is ahead of him on the depth chart. Maybe if Gurley were hurt, then my answer to this would be John Kelly. But as it stands, there's no reason to think that. Kelly also was a late-round pick when Kareem Hunt wasn't. So let's think about what happened to Kareem Hunt's situation that enabled his talent to shine last season. The Chiefs traded up and got him. He was immediately projected to be in some sort of split backfield with Spencer Ware, and then Spencer Ware got hurt. And they also didn't have a true third down back on that roster. Is there a situation identical to that across the league? I don't really think so. Maybe you could make the case for Kerryon Johnson since he may not step into a full workload right away, and the Lions did trade up to get him as well, but I don't think there's a clear cut he's the next Kareem Hunt in this class. There are guys that I like and I think that could surprise, but none in a situation like Kareem Hunt last year. This next question is from @govikes0910. How do you project the Indianapolis backfield given so much uncertainty? So one of those players who could realistically surprise in year one, I think, is Jordan Wilkins, but it's not because I think poorly of Marlon Mack or that I'm super high on Wilkins himself. I do think it's interesting that Wilkins was one of the most efficient backs in this class per carry during his final collegiate season. That's part of the equation when evaluating who can make the step to the next level, but I would have liked to see more volume from Wilkins in college. On top of this, as I said on a previous podcast, Marlon Mack was one of the worst running backs last year in terms of percentage of carries that went for fewer than 0 and fewer than 2 yards. I think Marlon Mack is talented, and he was banged up last year, but that's obviously not a good thing. How I project that backfield is that I think that Mack will get the most work. Right now, I have him penciled in for roughly 46% of the Colts' carries. But we have to remember that projections are one number, and they don't show volatility. The confidence I have in a Marlon Mack projection is not as strong as the confidence I have in a Le'Veon Bell projection. So much can happen. Mack can easily far exceed it, or he can really dip below that projection. With Le'Veon Bell, you sort of know exactly how he's going to be used. This is where you can find breakout candidates, though, through analyzing opportunity. If there's a cluster of a backfield, you know there's a chance that one particular under-the-radar player can emerge. And when there's uncertainty around a backfield, you can generally get all of the pieces in that backfield at a lower cost. So right now, I'm on Team Marlon Mack, but if I'm just being 100 with you guys, I'm on Team Marlon Mack knowing that his stability in that backfield is not as strong as backs in a lot of other situations. And that's why I'm going to keep an eye on Jordan Wilkins throughout the offseason. That's it for today's mailbag show, though, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you've got to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are doing so by searching for it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, and TuneIn. And again, when you're on iTunes, if you could leave me a rating and review, I would greatly appreciate it. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. If you want to read bad jokes, follow me on there. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.